Now, the phone lines remain open for you, of course, throughout the morning, 0860 25000. If you're listening on the podcast, by the way, you can still get in touch with us. Email comments@highlandradio.com. Or if you are listening overnight as well, very important listeners. We love you listening during the night for those on different shifts or perhaps don't sleep as well as others. You can always contact us, 08660 25000, or email comments@highlandradio.com. All right, okay. Let's see, loads of you texting in. We'll get some reaction, hopefully before 12, to the news that Eamon Ryan is stepping down. He's going to announce later that he's stepping down as leader of the Green Party. He hasn't outlined his reasons, of course, because he hasn't made the announcement yet. Joanna De Silva joins us on the programme now. Hi, Joanna.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us. Right, we're talking in the context of... Joanna is Chief Specialist in Nutrition with Safe Food. And Safe Food has launched a new five-year public health campaign aimed at tackling obesity and, of course, protecting children's health. So, Joanna, good morning again. And what is going to happen over the next 5 years? And maybe even start by talking of the issues that this is trying to address.
So this campaign is really focusing on the food environment, all those spaces where we see food, where we make decisions about food and how food is promoted to us online, by broadcasting public transport. If we are waiting in a bus shelter and we see an advertisement to food, that has changed over the last few years. The food environment that we live in is completely different to what our parents and our grandparents did in the past. And it's not a good one. It's unhealthy. It promotes unhealthy foods, foods that are high in fat, sugar, and salt. It affects our health. It affects the health of our children. So we need to shape it. We need to change it for better. We are doing very good things. The sugar tax is an example. We are providing school meals to a lot of children in primary schools in Ireland, but we need to do more. Mm-hmm. We cannot accept the current food environment that we have for our children.
And in terms of the information that children absorb, look, through advertising is really complex. There's a lot of thought and planning and data that goes into it. It's not ad hoc. It's targeted. It's very easy, I suppose, to target advertising through social media because they know everything about us, but also in the TV and radio, they know when certain demographics are listening. And the bottom line is from a very young age, children have massive brand awareness and knowledge and perhaps consumption of unhealthy food.
They can recognize logos and link those logos to certain types of foods before they know their ABCs, you know. So industry is very smart in the way that they are doing this. So we need more regulation in relation to how food is advertising. The good news is we are doing some good work. We also can learn from what other countries are doing. Portugal did really well in relation to online marketing of unhealthy foods. Across the water, England has introduced legislation in relation to what foods can be promoted and how foods should be placed in the supermarket. Because again, the way that the supermarkets and the convenience stores are laid out do not make it easy for us to make the healthier choice. It's you know what faces you by the till. You know what products you see by the end of the aisle. You know what products get the premium spots. So addressing that is very important too. It's also important to highlight that things become more difficult in less affluent areas, you know, the number of takeaways and Dublin City Council did lovely work recently, and they looked at the number of takeaways in different areas, and less affluent areas have more takeaways for unhealthy foods and less access to supermarkets.
And we're starting really from a disadvantaged position because, particularly for younger people, A, you have to almost disregard many of the advertisements you see if you want to eat healthy because you're pushed on healthy food. 1,000 ads from healthy food children see every year. And B, you sort of have to root around in your local supermarket and even more so in your convenience shop for healthy options. You know what I mean? That's an awful lot. That's an awful lot, isn't it?
It's very difficult. I took the train this morning. I'm working in Dublin today, and I took the train to Euston, and I wanted something for breakfast. And I'm pretty sure there was a good sandwich somewhere. I had this conversation with one of your colleagues earlier. But I could only smell pastry, and I could only see foods that weren't really the best option for my breakfast. It makes it really hard on all of us to make those choices. And the public want this. We want change. Safe Food did research in the past in relation to how we could accept policies to address obesity and to support better choices. And we want this. So now is the moment to change. Now is the moment to talk about this. Look around today, see how your food environment is looking like, and ask your listeners to do the same.
And Joanna, listen, we all want the best for our children and for all children. So let's talk about the nutritional side of this, because, you know, if you have, and we're going to talk to a gardener later, right? And someone might say, you know, I want to grow a tomato plant. How do I do that? And the soil, you know, you have to have new soil. You have to have tomato food. You don't want to water it too much. You have to, you know, give specific care to produce the ripest, juiciest tomatoes. And it's kind of the same with our children, isn't it? If we're serving an awful lot of brown food on big plates, you know, where are they pulling the nutrients from that food for bone development, brain development, eyesight development, so that they can grow to their height potential? You know, we really need to sort of start seeing the connection between what's going into them and what's outputted as a result.
Of course, and their right to health, their right to a healthy diet. And when these foods are being consumed, they are displacing important nutrients for development, for growth. Now, one of the good programs in Ireland is the funded school meals program, and there is commitment from the Department of Social Protection in relation to providing a free school meal to every child in primary school by 2030. So it's important to highlight the very good policies that are already in place and in development, but at the same time to acknowledge that we need to do more.
Yeah, and it's a funny world we live in at the moment, because, you know, we talk about obesity and carrying weight, and then obviously, you know, what as well as the messaging that you're talking of, there's another messaging really is that's the body positive messaging, right? Whereby, you know, you can be who you want to be. You see the adverts for underarm moisturizing cream, anything like that there. You know, you could argue that actually people who are overweight are actually more represented than people that are not. I wonder, is that another thing that's coming at another direction? So we're being fed all this stuff through adverts and what have you that tells that you know is bad for us and promotes obesity, and then we're getting it from another area of advertising which tells us that, you know, it doesn't matter if what weight you are, you can ice dance and you can do gymnastics and you can take. I'm not saying you can't do that. Don't get me wrong, Joanna, but I'm kind of trying to sort of address the overall messaging in terms of.
There's a few things there. First of all, we all live in different bodies. Our bodies have different sizes and shapes. Obesity is a chronic relapsing disease. It's no one's fault. This is about health, and food-related health or ill health includes many things, including type 2 diabetes or certain types of cancer, for example. So we need to make that very, very clear. We're talking about health. We're not just talking about obesity. Obesity is a condition that needs to be treated in a clinical context.
Okay, so just be clear. But so if there's a 10-year-old who is a stone and a half or 2 stone overweight, you're saying that they're not necessarily unhealthy?
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is that child needs to be seen by their clinician. This is a public health campaign that is promoting healthier food environments for everyone, for people living in every type of shaped bodies, big, larger, smaller, taller, shorter. This is not something to treat any clinical condition like obesity or like diabetes, for example. This is about preventing and promoting healthier behaviors.
Yeah, I understand, and I understand it's not about judging people, and I certainly wouldn't be judging people, but you've got it from every angle. If you're a young person, you're being told that you should eat all this crap food, and then you've been told as well that if you happen to become overweight, that that's grand, just be you. And then somewhere in between, Joanna, you're saying, well, and others are saying, you need to be healthy. And we're tiptoeing around all the language and all the different things, but hopefully that doesn't hinder getting to where we need to get over the next 5 years.
No. And regardless of the type of body that we live in, we should live in or the food environment that surrounds us should be supportive of healthier choices. Mm-hmm. And that's the main point of this campaign. It shouldn't be difficult for yourself or for myself or for our children to go into a space where food is sold and to make the right decision, regardless of our body shape or their body shape.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's fine. All right, thanks very much, Joanna. Where is more information available? Presumably we could go to Save Food. Are there resources there?
You can go to the Save Food website, and your listeners could also follow us on social media. We're very active on every social media channel.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much. Lovely to speak to you. I do appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Bye. That's Joanna De Silva, Chief Specialist in Nutrition, Save Food. My GP is not quite as linguistic in saying very clear to me, you need to lose a stone and a half. I says, what? He says, yeah, look. And he pointed at my belly. Stone and a half, you need to lose it. Because if you don't, you're risking high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, and other cancer. I thought I went in there feeling quite good about myself. Right, okay. That's Joanna De Silva, Chief Specialist in Nutrition, Safe Food. Rightio. Good morning. Could you please ask your presenter why during the Garda slot, and specifically talk around the rally, as to why no mention was made about the traffic management around Letterkenny over the weekend, given the issues with traffic lights, etc.? Morning, Greg. Do you know what road closures on Saturday is? Old Town Road closed that leads onto the dual carriageway. Thanks. Another, can the guard stop official rally cars doing time trials in the special areas of conservation on the R254 in Glenveagh National Park? They block the public's road. Well, thank you for all of those. To be clear, obviously, Community Guard information is on Tuesday. We're going to be talking about the rally and also traffic management and those issues on Thursday, just in the lead up to it. The Community Guard information item is just mostly about appeals. Granny did a great job of mentioning the road safety message. But in terms of the logistics, that's all going to be covered for you on Thursday in the mouth of the rally. Perhaps maybe some of you need to know that beforehand. But anyway, that's the way it was planned out. What about the noise pollution throughout the night during the rally? Yeah, indeed. Listen, I'm glad I don't live in Letterkenny. Are the four lanes going to be open on one lane so that emergency services can get through during rally weekend? Well, I think the last thing you need to be doing, I take your point, but the last thing you'd want to be doing at rally weekend is closing part of the main access to the town. Hello, is the roadwork stopping in Lahey and outside Ballybuffet? Hello, is this for the rally? That's a good question. We'll try and find that out. How do you defend yourself if you are attacked by a larger dog? Well, that's a good question. And there's more coming in on the dogs. Really busy on that issue. We'll be coming to that shortly. Right, okay. Back with more on today's 9 till noon show after this break. More so by accident than design, there's kind of been a theme of road safety and safety with the dogs, as we were talking earlier on. I'm going into to road water safety now, because quite rightly, an awful lot of attention is paid to safety on our roads, given the tremendous loss of life. But we certainly can't take our eyes off the water, both inland. It's not just the sea and our rivers, but other inland waterways as well. And we have Roger Sweeney now, who's Deputy CEO and Marketing Manager at Water Safety Ireland. And Water Safety Ireland is saying that water safety should be as important as measures to prevent road traffic collisions. Good morning, Roger. Can you hear me, Roger? No, Roger cannot hear me. Okay, I'm going to kick him out and bring him back in. One second now. We'll go to Roger in a second. Actually, I brought someone else in who I'll speak to in a moment. Right, so I'm just waiting for Roger to join us now, and we'll have a chat to him. Just listening to Kathleen Murray, says the listener on the dog issue. She's 100% right. I support her fully. That comes in from Monica. Another in 2023, XL bullies made up 1% of Britain's dogs' population, but responsible for 43% of all attacks. Kathleen clearly loves dogs, but she is in denial. Roger, are you there?
Greg,
good
are
morning.
You there?
I am indeed. I had a full stall there. That was my fault. I was just saying in the preamble, Roger, that you know we are rightly very conscious of road safety, but we need to, and this is Water Safety Ireland's position as well. We need to make sure that we have as many measures in place as possible to prevent tragedy in our waterways, be it both inshore and offshore, I suppose.
You know, Greg, I'm so glad that you mentioned road safety to give it a bit of perspective, because I think it's a bit of an eyebrow raiser for some of your listeners if they think about this. We had about 1,300, just over 1,300 deaths on our roads and in the water combined over 5 years. And nearly half were drownings, nearly half, 45%. So it's really a tragedy that takes lives, about 10 lives every single month. That's 10 communities, 10 families that are devastated every single month on average, Greg. And so, you know, and it's not just at summertime, but rightly so that we should talk about it, particularly over the summer months. You know, we need to give, as you say, water safety as much attention as we do road safety, you know.
And indeed, and there's more interesting information too that might come as a surprise to people. It's what leads to a drowning. You know, we have seen a fantastic rise in sea swimming and what have you and things like that there, and we're in the water more, so people might say, well, naturally more people in the water, that's you know, very sadly going to lead to higher tragic instances. But it's that's not really the makeup of those, unfortunately, that are losing their lives. It's far more nuanced than that.
It is, absolutely. And you know, in terms of the sea swimming since COVID, of course, it's crucial that people take the necessary steps to be safe. You know, and that goes for child supervision, knowing that you, where you get in, that you can get out safely if you're caught by a slight current, for example. But that said, swimming only accounted for about a quarter of the accidental deaths, about nearly 60% of the drownings. Those individuals were actually up to something on land, not actually swimming, you know. So if you think about walking, if you think about everything from picking blackberries, for God's sake, you know. Terrible.
Angling, of course, rock angling, sea angling.
Angling from shore.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So sometimes I think people can, you know, they, you get a lovely summer, lovely weather, they can be lulled into a false sense of security and get too close to the edge. That's actually why we even say to the kids in our schools program to stay safe, SAFEs, to stay away from edges. But sometimes I think people, especially if alcohol is taken, because alcohol is a factor in about a third of drownings, Greg. And so if you have alcohol taken, no matter what you're doing, you may overestimate your ability and underestimate the risks. That can happen anyway when people are leaving, say, the lovely pool environments of the indoor swimming pool and then coming out in the summertime and getting into the water. But the water typically stays colder than the air. It's always colder, especially at this time of the year. And most people haven't dipped a toe in the water yet, Greg. Not since last year.
But you Roger, know, there's something going on or a gap somewhere, isn't there? Because look, we are an island. We've got sea the whole way around us. We are blessed with so many lakes in every county and rivers and all the waterways that we have. And yet, in terms of our understanding of it, our perhaps our respect for it or our understanding of the dangers, there's a serious sort of knowledge gap there, which, as I say, is quite remarkable with so much sea around us and, of course, so much inland waterways. Where's the gap? Is it education?
It's a very good point. There's something missing, because you triggered a memory with me, Greg, even that I remember as a young boy that road safety wasn't really spoken about. And next thing, we started to hear in schools about the importance of wearing seatbelts. And certainly, I think we're at a stage where children are now coming home and starting to have a conversation around water. But at the same time, that conversation, typically, I'm not saying everybody, but typically it's left until there's a series of tragic drownings. Yeah. It's left until there's a really hot spell, Greg. But really, that water safety conversation with loved ones, that has to happen now. It has to happen months before you even go near the water. And that needs to really emphasize things like, you know, questioning, do you have a swimming ability? Are you competent in the warm swimming pool at a leisure center? But then do you know about mm-hmm. the dangers that, and these are situations where people drown every year, from entanglement, from currents, rip currents, for example. But then even a lot of people drown inland as well due to currents because they get into someplace safely, but then they can't get out because they've drifted just into a deeper area.
Yeah.
So that conversation, I think it goes right back to your point, Greg, about what's missing. I think that water safety conversation is missing. You know,
maybe even just a module in transition year. Like, I just wonder if you stopped 100 people across Donegal, which is effectively surrounded by water, by the strip of border, and you said to them, like, you know, if you fall into the sea or a river, you know, what's the first thing that's going to happen to you? What's your body's reaction going to be? And what might that hinder? So that's the panic, the water shock, you know, the panic of the cold.
That's right.
How do you calm that? What do you do with clothes or shoes? What's the best way to stay afloat until someone sees you, or to get attention, or do you know what I mean? Like, that's basic.
Or what
stuff.
Do you do if you see somebody in trouble?
Precisely,
in the first place.
Yeah. So I think if you asked 100 people, I would say they'd probably score about between 30% and 40% on those basic questions, which has to come down to sort of education. We can't expect behavior of people, including myself here, if we don't actually have the tools, i.e., the knowledge to have that to influence that behavior.
I think you're spot on there, and I have a two-pronged something in my mind in terms of, first of all, with education. I think we Water Safety Ireland, certainly from our perspective, from the volunteers, etc., around the country, well used to having that conversation about the volunteers teaching swimming and life-saving skills to youngsters and adults, and then they go on to become examiners and instructors and lifeguards. Yes, we know that. But also, we're taking a whole-of-life approach now. So we've sent every creche in the country, for example, really colourful packs to start that conversation. But on the back of the colourful cartoons that the children can point to, the dangers, on the back, we give the tips for the educators. So that, and I think that's what's missing, Greg. I think people have, culturally, I think we've had an unhealthy fear of water. And what we need to do is to take an approach that will convert that unhealthy fear into a healthy respect for all of these environments. And how do you do that? Yes, through education, but also people need to take a responsibility, I think, not only for their own actions, but also for the children in their care and for their friends and family. And how do you do that with education and that conversation? Well, the whole of life is a really good example. Anybody listening at the moment that has children in creches, ask if that resource pack has been taken down off the shelf for the summer ahead.
Yeah.
Because children, I swear, they can learn at 4 and 5 years of
but
age.
But us as parents and guardians and caregivers can't relinquish all responsibility to the schools
exactly.
as well. I take exactly what you're saying though, Roger. But here we are in this cycle again where we are seeing certain shops, you know, it's up to them what they do. The inflatables are back for sale again, you know. And
thankfully, on the inflatables.
Yeah, but just on that, I'm just saying at the moment, right, we've got a nice little northerly breeze, but very quickly after the weekend, as soon as the sun comes out, that could turn easterly, which all of a sudden for us here in this part of the world, for a lot of the county, is an offshore breeze. Now, I've not seen an ad for one of these places that actually sells a bloody life jacket at a discount price, but plenty of inflatables. What do you want to say about it, Roger? Sorry for the waffle.
No, Greg, in the middle of what you said there, you said in an instant it can change. And some of your listeners will remember Ellen Glynn, because I was speaking to her mother just yesterday. And Ellen Glynn and her cousin were swept from shore out beyond the Aran Islands, out actually just off Inishere, next stop New York, just back around 2021. And we've done a lot of awareness campaigns for teenagers and young adults around the fact that these inflatable stand-up boards, these inflatable toys and boats, you can be swept out in an instant. What happens, and the lifeguards that are on duty are driven demented every year, having to tell people to take these away. These are not appropriate for offshore breezes, can take you away in an instant. But what happens is the child panics, and then an adult competent on land suddenly tries to get out to the inflatable toy and gets into all sorts of difficulties, and then the lifeguards have to kick in. And God forbid if the lifeguard isn't around, for example. But so culturally, again, I think we need this healthy respect for our aquatic environments by knowing what's dangerous, knowing the risks. And it comes back to this conversation. It comes back to people taking responsibility for having that conversation. And I think this week is a good time because it's National Water Safety Awareness Week. But at the same time, what does that mean? Well, it means that the schools are not yet closed. And we have created a video, Water Safety Ireland. If you go onto YouTube and put in Water Safety Ireland, you'll get a 7-minute video specifically for primary school children. And those 7 minutes could save a life. They give all the children all the tips. And we talk about these tips frequently, but this goes into more detail. So I'd ask anybody listening, if it's one thing you do before the summer, and any teachers listening as well, please play that video. It's 7 minutes that could save a life.
And another thing, Roger, too, I'm a massive fan of the water. My children are as well, and I'm encouraging that. And lots of those are around me. The first opportunity is to get out into the water. Don't be afraid of it. It's a wonderful resource, exactly. And it's wonderful for children as well. This is about just doing it safely, not discouraging
people. We are not killjoys here,
There's nothing worse than irrational fear. There's no need for that. This is just about logic and safety, and get the young ones out into the water because there's literally nothing like it. It's just a case of doing it safely and to avoid tragedy. Roger,
exactly, Greg. Yep. I think a lot of people can recall people being told as children, stay away from the water or I'll kill you. That type of thing. But we convert that now by telling people exactly what's dangerous, and watersafety.ie will give you exactly what you need to know to stay safe for the summer ahead.
Good stuff. Take care of yourself and stay safe yourself. That's Roger Sweeney, Deputy CEO and Marketing Manager at Water Safety Ireland. Okie doke. So as we revealed to you less than an hour ago, the Green Party leader Eamon Ryan's expected to announce this afternoon that he's stepping down as party leader. Mr. Ryan's due to make an unscheduled announcement at government buildings after this morning's cabinet meeting. It's understood he will not leave cabinet. Michael White is chair of the Green Party in Donegal, and I suppose just learned of this information around the same time the rest of us did, Michael, because you were chatting to Eamon Ryan briefly last week, and there were no indications at that point that he was on the brink of stepping down.
No, it wasn't, Greg. Good morning. There wasn't any indications when I spoke to him, and there's no big push internally that I was aware of. I know we had a tough local elections. It wasn't a total wipe that had been predicted. So generally the feeling was that the party came out of the local elections in a reasonable shape. So there was no big push to run against Eamon Ryan that I'm aware of. So today's come as much a surprise to me as it has to everybody else.
Do you think then the motivation might be something other than the outcome of the local elections? Of course, I understand I'm asking you to speculate here.
It's pure speculation, yeah. I guess the next thing, the political horizon, is obviously the general election. But the timing seems a bit odd to me that you know, again, perhaps he thought he didn't want to be leading the party into the next general election. There's enough time for a new leader to prepare. But it is speculation, and you know, in terms of track records, he took the party from a near-death situation in 2011, strongest ever showing in 2019. He's had we've had a huge impact in government, and that's a lot down to his ability to organise the party when he was in government. So he's a lot of achievements on his belt. And as I say, today's a bit of a surprise. Well, actually, it's a big surprise to all of us, I think, from running on online groups. Nobody was expecting this.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, you know, I mean, for a lot of people, the Green Party policies aren't popular. For many people, they're necessary. He's kind of become a bit of a lightning rod, I think, for negativity within government. And it is important to say, and some people might not like me saying this, but that's okay. He's very highly respected and well thought of outside of Ireland and within Ireland by many, but particularly a strong reputation outside of Ireland. So he just then must clearly think that he is not the right person to lead the Greens into the next election. Maybe he saw the bounce that Fine Gael seemingly got from the change of leadership there and is doing the same for his own party.
Possibly, yeah, but it's just worth, you know, he is well-regarded, and one of the reasons he's well-regarded, what I'd point out, is last year, Ireland's in its peak, the first time, directly because of the impact the Green Party had on government and some of the measures taken since 2020. So he's, you know, it's not all down to him, but at least he can lay claim to having had a really positive, beneficial impact on Ireland's trajectory. But yeah, as you say, maybe well respected outside of Ireland. Obviously, he's had issues in rural areas. He's not popular. The speculation about why he chose to resign now. And I guess what the thinking is, what happens next? So there'll be some people throwing their hats in the next few days, I guess, to try and replace him.
Could you pick two that you think are likely to replace him?
It's funny, because there wasn't any big push to replace him, it's not something that had been on my mind. The two obvious candidates that I can think of are Catherine Martin, who challenged him for the leadership in 2020, and then Senator Pauline O'Reilly, who's the chair of the party, so they kind of pop into mind. But you also have ministers like Malcolm Noonan, Roderick O'Gorman, Martin Smith, you know, and Senator Hackett. These are all people who throw their hat in the ring.
Okay, Michael, listen, the line is not fantastic, but we got the thrust of your points, and I appreciate you taking the call at short notice, and wish you well. Have a good day.
Thanks, I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye. Now, the funny situation here is a wee bit funny, is that Minister Ryan's expected to stay on as Minister for Environment and Transport, though he, if whomever replaces him as the leader, has the decision-making power on who is the Green Ministers. So the new party leader might say, thanks very much, but we're going to move you out of Environment and Transport and put this person in, such is the makeup of it. OK, interesting stuff. We'll surely get more reaction to that on the programme tomorrow. But that was Michael White's initial reaction to it. What do you think out there? 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right, we're going to take the quarter two break 5 minutes early, because then we're going to focus on the garden, because Paul McLaughlin is in with us. He is a gardener at Ballygar Garden Centre at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. And if you have a question, it's not too late to get it addressed to Paul. WhatsApp or text 086 60 25,000. You can WhatsApp your voice note, by the way, if it's easier to explain, right? Because sometimes via text, it can be difficult to get your point across. So feel free to voice note us on WhatsApp if you've got a question for Paul. It's good for us, it's good for you. And you can also call Caroline or Shannon, in fact, on 07491 25,000. Paul's with me after these. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballygar Garden Centre. Chilly enough at night too. Does that affect anything, I wonder?
It does too, to be honest. It's just the garden, especially the summer flowers and stuff.
I expect honesty from you, Paul.
Yes.
Every answer needs to be honest.
Very good, very good. Now, everything's looking a bit flat at the minute, so it is, to be quite honest. Just it's the sunshine levels aren't there to bring flowers on and stuff
they
like that.
They need that. That is their lifeblood, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's just...
So we'll see. Hopefully we're going to see an increase in sunshine this week, and things are looking middling. Definitely good for Sunday and beyond, hopefully, fingers crossed. So that's good for the gardens, good
yes,
for the grass.
Yes, absolutely. You have to keep the faith.
Yeah. All right, okay. The weather has not been great, but we've seen other parts of the continent seeing record weather. I suppose extremely hot weather.
Yes.
Dry spells present their own challenges too.
Absolutely. You know, dry spells can be as tough on plants as sort of too much or not enough sunshine, if you know what I mean. But we're also looking for that happy medium, I suppose. Now, I see Southern Europe's getting it very hot at the moment.
So if the weather is picking up, how can we give a bit of zhoosh to the garden?
Yeah, pretty much just make sure everything's sort of in as good a condition as it can be. A healthy plant's going to perform well, so maybe give it a wee feed at this stage. Just keep an eye on the watering, just in case that all those raining outside plants in specific positions may not be getting enough water, if you know what I mean. But just and if they're getting a bit out of shape, just give them a wee trim now, a wee light trim.
What if you're looking at your summer bedding and you go, it's mid-June, looking a bit sorry for itself? Is that it done? Will it come back?
No, absolutely not. No, if it's what I got, if the weather comes good now, it will fly along, so it will. And like I say, don't be afraid if it's getting a wee bit out of shape. Don't be afraid to give it a wee light trim. Just reshape it, kind of. You might cost yourself flowers for another week, but
and to give it a vitamin D boost as well. You know, if the sun comes out, bring the plants out into the sun if they're in shaded areas.
Yes, if they are in a shaded bit and they've been suffering for a while, if at all practical, you can bring them out to the sunshine and actually just give them that wee boost, like you say, the wee vitamin D boost. I'll keep them going on.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of what to put on plants,
yes,
you talked about giving them a bit of feed. What's the best?
Pretty much the best we would think would be Miracle-Gro. Miracle-Gro is a general purpose fertiliser. It kind of does everything, but it's a short-term boost. You Miracle-Gro every 2 weeks and sort of lasts for 2 weeks, so you have to sort of maintain it through the flowering period. But it's that good instant boost. Like if you use something like your poultry manure, it's a slower burn, if you know what I mean. So it's going to take longer. So if you're looking for instant results, like some Miracle-Gro.
And at the end of the day, the rest is in the lap of the gods, isn't it? Because with the best will in the world, these are living things and they respond to their environment and their conditions. And hopefully they'll bounce back and look fantastic. But it's a wee bit in the lap of the gods too.
Yeah, pretty much. Like last year, sort of never really came around as such. Like after June, it sort of everything's a wee bit downhill. But now we have to hope for the best.
We'll get on to more stuff, but I want to get to a few questions as well. Black-eyed Susie plants. Planted it 2 years ago. It never came back this year. What could or would have happened?
Probably like the Rudbeckia there would be, should be a very reliable plant, should be actually an easy growing plant. What may have happened, some of them perennial plants, if it was lying sort of in a damp position over winter, maybe the sort of roots of it may have rotted a wee bit, you know what I mean? They can be sometimes susceptible to sort of mice damage as well, if sort of if it's a lean winter, right, may go for the roots of that, but it'd be more likely that it was sitting on too wet a spot and just didn't survive over the winter.
All right, I want to plant calla lilies. Mm-hmm. Can you advise what kind of area, soil, etc.?
Yeah, calla lilies, lovely plants, so they are very, very impressive looking plants. Generally, they like full sun. They will tolerate partial shade, but generally full sun if possible to get them flowering nicely, and pretty much any sort of midland well-drained soil.
Yeah, okay. Can you ask your guest, Paul, how I can treat or prevent potato blight organically? I tried a mix of baking soda, water dish soap, fairy liquid, I presume that is, vegetable oil, but it didn't work. So they mixed baking soda, dish soap, and vegetable oil. Didn't work.
Yeah.
But they want the organic route, if possible, to tackle blight.
Right. Potato blight is a huge problem at the moment. This particular type of weather here is very much on it. You do get the fungicides for it, which obviously aren't organic. For organic nature, the best thing you can do is stuff called copper mixture. It's what like old farmers use. It's called blue stone. But it's based in copper, but it builds up the plant and sort of builds up its resistance to blight.
So it fights off blight more fights than off you blight, prevent
but it. It's important to actually get it on pretty much now before blight would really set in. Mm. So copper mixture you get in most garden centres and it's certified organic.
Hot, humid weather, is that blight weather? It is.
Exactly. Sure. And even sort of misty weather, like even last night, sort of mist sort of settled down there, and that's pretty much hanging there. That sort of continuous dampness sort of helps spread blight and everything.
But I mean, there's no guarantees if you're going down the organic route, really, is there?
No guarantees, pretty much. But you sort of, the healthier the plant, the more you have the plant built up, the sort of better it is able to fight off infection.
My rhubarb's not doing the best this year. Any suggestions to feed it along or bring it along?
Rhubarb's very sort of, it's a very hungry plant. Mm. So it is very hungry. The best thing you use for rhubarb is manure. Sort of give it a good mulch of manure if you could get well rotted, sort of horse or cow manure, like 2 years old. And put on as a mulch in the autumn time. That'll feed it for next year. But poultry manure will do as well.
Okay. I'm thinking of growing some carrots. Mm-hmm. Could I grow them in a pot to see how successful I am, or do they need a garden?
In an ideal world, you probably would have them in the ground in the sense that just to get the length of them.
Yeah.
The pot you're going to use, chances are. But they do work well in a window box, something like that. But you'll never get huge carrots. But quite good. But carrots are notoriously difficult.
Are they?
I've always found them very difficult
really?
To grow.
Okay.
So it is.
Fascinating. What can I do with tomatoes that are spoiled all the time with black spots?
Black spots, I wonder, is the black spots on the fruit or on the
blossom?
On the blossom. Mm. Chances are, if it's on the fruit, it's a thing called blossom end rot, which is a big black spot, comes where the blossom had been on the tomato. What happens there is it comes from irregular watering. So if you can sort of nail down your watering scheme in terms of, if you say you do it every night at 6 o'clock, just keep continuing doing that, because just if you like do it today and then miss 2 days and come back, it tends to bring on that blossom end rot.
And generally speaking, with tomatoes, regular feeding and green fly is a real enemy of tomatoes.
Yes, absolutely. Green fly, just the growing tips at the minute. Green fly love them, so they do all right. So keep an eye out for that there. And
what do you do if there is green fly about? Do you
green fly? There are a few sort of different ways you can use your garlic spray to sort of keep them off.
Yeah.
Even just the hose, you can just wash them off if you want to be organic. You do get the bug sprays too, but as the season goes on, the tomatoes are developing. A lot of people don't like sort of using the sprays at that point. So, but even once again, your fay liquid and water will help to remove
it. All right, okay. How do I establish if a weed in my garden is Japanese knotweed, and how do I get rid of it?
Yes, Japanese knotweed, I suppose the first thing would be the identification. Take photos of it and bring it to your local garden centre. They should be able to identify it for you. Do not please bring the bit of plant with you, because we do not require it. We don't, because they're notoriously, they can grow from very little bits, if you know what I mean. So first of all, get it identified. If it is Japanese knotweed, I'm afraid the only option is chemicals. the chemicals do. It's Japanese knotweed's got this big terrible reputation. It's been sort of unkillable and stuff, but it is quite killable.
So if you dig it out though, would that not get rid of it?
Not particularly. The roots can go down 3 meters.
Wow.
So we can. So it sort of lies dormant down for a while and it will come back again, yeah. If you know what I mean. So it's, and the problem is if you dig it out, where do you put it?
Yeah.
Because it's illegal to move it. Wow. So you can't actually dig it out and move it somewhere else, if you know what I mean. So probably chemical spray is the only real option.
And is that you don't have to notify the local authority or anything, do you?
No.
You can tackle it. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Hi Greg, I have gooseberry bushes and every year fruit is on them. Then suddenly it all disappears when the leaves are stripped to bare wood.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening there?
A thing called a sawfly, I do believe. Sawfly is notorious on gooseberries of that. Mm. They're sort of like wee caterpillars almost. They're very interesting wee creatures. They've actually got the, if you see sawflies on a plant, rub your hand sort of about an inch over them, they'll do this wee defensive dance to get you away.
Wow.
So they will, because they're only about an inch long or so. But sawflies.
Got small man syndrome.
Pretty much. But they're what I call, but they're, sawflies can just, they can strip a plant in a few days. So they can just keep an eye on them. You get sprays for them as well, or you can just physically remove them.
How do I get rid of ragweed?
Ragweed, ragweed's probably what most people around here would refer to as benweed.
What are they? Describe them to us.
No, you see them in grassland, the big tall sort of very yellow.
Oh, right, okay.
So what do you call it? Ragwort probably would be the proper name for them. Mm. But generally the most effective way of getting rid of them is just dig them out. They're actually quite shallow-rooted, and they're, because they're big, easily handleable plants, probably the easiest way to get.
Morris also wants to know about leather jackets.
Yes, leather jackets are a big problem in grassland as well. So they are. You do get sprays for it now, but I think most of them are agricultural use only, so you'd have to get a contractor maybe to use them for you if you want to go down the spray route. Another way of doing it is to encourage birds to the garden. Mm. The birds actually will
feed on them, effectively.
Pretty much. Yeah. So the way to do that would be get an old carpet or someone, lay it out on top of the grass, take it off in the morning, and then they're all on the surface and the birds come along and just eat them all for you.
I've had this problem, moss on old tarmac.
Yes.
What? How do you get rid of it easily? Well, nothing's easily when we're talking about easily, moss on tarmac.
They say old tarmac, so a lot of time you can just sort of, if you use some sort of thing to kill it off first and then pressure wash it off. Yeah. But if it's old tarmac, you maybe sort of...
We see the problem with the old tarmac and the pressure washer, you know, especially say, for instance, if you go into, you know, your local shop and just get a pressure washer, it's lifting stones as well, and causing holes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who do this for a living, and... it's not, obviously it's not free, but it's not incredibly expensive. You cannot beat getting someone who knows how to do this to come in and do it.
Absolutely.
Because that's what I had. And they were there for, you know, half a day. And clearly the tarmac was still old as you know what. But, you know, someone knowing what they're doing, going in, and they can do it quickly.
Oh,
I
absolutely
don't think you can beat that.
Yeah. No, well, you're definitely a professional. Every man sort of knows his job, if you know what I mean. But
well, this is a woman, actually.
Oh, very good. Excellent. Very good.
By coincidence.
Yes. Yeah. Aye, so what I go. But
not
no,
calling you out,
someone got there, what I got, a lot of people, I see it around the place now, you see it as you drive about, a lot of people are using washing powder now.
Mm.
So biological washing powder.
And it doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be expensive.
No,
stuff.
Absolutely not. No, just your what I got, any run-of-the-mill stuff, and put it on. It'll actually effectively kill the moss.
Yeah.
And makes it easier to remove even with the power washer. That.
Yeah.
Or another thing you can do, go to a lot of the food wholesalers, vinegar.
Right.
Kill it too. So you can get like 5 liter drums of vinegar.
That won't work on the weeds on it as well, will it? Or is that just really?
The vinegar will knock back the weeds too, if you know what I mean. But it's not sort of systemic. It just kills what's above the ground.
So around the house at the moment, it's just weeds everywhere. Like, and you know, it's even just the notion of starting spraying and and really effectively the weeds die back, but they're still there. So then you have to do something else. Like it's a.
I know, it's a never-ending battle, all right. So it
and what was remarkable, too, at the back of the house, there was a sort of like a strip 5 feet, 5 feet by about 30 feet, and I bit the bullet because it was messy. So I took down an old fence that was rotten there and put down a plastic sheet and then put little stones on it, you know, like so that, what do you call it? It's not tarpaulin, but it's...
The Mapex.
Mapex, right. And I thought, well, that's it, maintenance-free. Next thing you know, bloody weeds grow anywhere.
Yes.
They're just literally growing between the stones. Now, they're far easier lifted.
Yes.
But it was the scale. You would take half a day to lift them, but they didn't. They don't have any soil as such. They just can grow in any environment.
There are miracles in nature. Like even concrete, you can see them growing away happily enough. So, but it's just sad. It seems to be a never-ending battle.
And another thing too, and I made the mistake going back, and lots of people do, I see it as my personal mistake, I'm not judging others, is, you know... putting down white stone, like it's lovely.
Yeah.
Just when it's done. But my word, that's hard to maintain.
Yes, it can be. It
is right, because though. You even if you weed it, the weeds die there and they look crap and they're hard to pick up and it's tough.
Oh no, that is tough. All right, the gravel. Every sort of thought like gravel gardens would be like maintenance free gardens, but the most thing.
But they look lovely when you've done them. Mm-hmm. But I think they take more maintenance to keep to that look than alternatives.
Yeah, no, I seen a guy actually one day was taking the stones had got dirty. So what he was doing was actually loading them into a cement mixer and washing them and putting them back on again.
Well, fair play to that man.
But it's a lot of work just.
It's a lot of work, or washing his stones. Mm-hmm. I think in America, I've seen them spray them. It's like with a glue.
They're resin bound.
Yeah, yep. So they bind them and maybe that's easier. I don't know.
But no, that's funny. That's actually becoming quite popular in here too.
Is it?
So it is, just for driveways and stuff. You know?
Yeah, because you get the look, but there's a little bit more resilience there, I think, to stuff funny, and easy to clean.
I was watching TV one night, I'd seen Tyson Fury had it done in the garden.
Right.
But he had like his name in the driveway, just bound into the gravel and all. But it actually had looked very good, actually.
Yeah, of course. How do I keep my plants cool and hydrated?
Cool and hydrated, I suppose, if it's in the garden.
Sunglasses and a bottle of water?
Pretty much. So it'll be umbrella for them as well. But no, sort of, if they're in the garden, apply mulch like bark or something like that. Helps to actually keep the moisture down. If you're watering, water morning or evening, because if you water during the day, sort of it evaporates too quickly. But good mulch around them helps to maintain moisture.
Just time for one quick one. How to prevent weeds from taking over my garden?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we kind of spoke about there. I'd say the most effective and environmentally friendly way is get a pair of gloves and have at it.
And get a nice wee cushion for under your knees and away you go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right, listen, Paul, thanks as always. Right. It's been a pleasure. That 20 minutes really flew in.
Thank you.
That's Paul from Ballacdur Garden Centre. And you can call into Ballacdur Garden Centre or any of our fantastic garden centres around the region. And they're more than happy to help you and work with you. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 9. Have a great day.